Welcome to CYC Podcast Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 98. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. As I do this interview on March 31st, 2017, it is Trans Day of Visibility. This day is about recognizing and celebrating trans people. The theme for 2017 is trans resistance, and there is much oppression towards trans people to resist. Over the past 5 years, we've interviewed trans youth and trans adults about supporting trans youth. We've not interviewed any parents of trans youth, or if we have, that I'm unaware of, that was not the topic of our conversation. Today, however, I'm speaking with Patty, the mother of Francis, about being the parent of a child who is also, among many other things, trans. Welcome, Patty, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Before you decide to do this podcast with me, You had a conversation with your son, Francis. Can you share a little bit about that conversation with me?
Sure. It seemed important to make sure that Francis was comfortable with the fact that I was going to be talking about being his parent, particularly around trans issues and some of the, you know, some of the struggles and challenges that we've had as a family and some of his own stuff. And I had anticipated some real resistance, or not real resistance, but at least some discomfort. And so I said, oh, I've been asked to do this thing. What do you think? Oh, that would be great, said Francis. And I was like, oh, really? Yeah, no, that's really cool. And I went, oh, well, and then Francis looked at me and said, why do you look uncomfortable? And I said, well, because I thought you might be uncomfortable with me talking about being your mom. And Francis' response was, hell no. So that's why we're here today.
It's a great reason.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of why he was excited and thought it was a great idea for you to talk with me?
I think, Francis is a pretty informed, pretty political kid. And I think is always wanting to support marginalized people generally, and people in difficult situations, and has just always been that kind of a kid. So I think the fact that I would want to share my own experience of what is, for some parents, really difficult, and many, all of us, I guess, I think Francis is very much about educating people, mm-hmm. and very much about thinking that if people are asking questions and talking about it, that's really helpful. And I think that's probably why he thought that. Yeah. I mean, he didn't really say it, nor would he probably, but I was actually surprised by their response. So yeah.
Nice. Francis is trans, but I think it's really important that we don't reduce people down to a single factor, whatever that single factor is. Mm-hmm. I've never met Francis. I've only heard about Francis through you. Could you paint a little bit of a picture or talk a bit about who Francis is?
Yes, it's every mother's favorite thing. What a great question. Francis is 15 and going on 35, and very insightful, very sensitive person, very outrageous, would describe himself as, I'm the crazy friend in the group, even though he wouldn't use the word crazy because that's disrespectful to people with mental health issues. So it's my word, not Francis's. I'm the goofy one, I'm the silly one, I make everybody laugh. But Francis is at the same time deeply compassionate and funny and, also can be very, can be this very large personality, but is also, suffers from anxiety and has some of those issues and has had some depression. And so is kind of this, Francis reads and loves to read and, loves to dance. How could I not talk about dancing? Francis loves to dance and is very powerful when he dances and very empowered. And I love that, and has been dancing for many, many years. So, like any kid, is very complex and very multi-layered, and I am, is the most interesting human being I've ever met in my life, but that's just me. But it's, I think when you have someone you care about in your life, and you're able to sort of separate yourself away from your relationship with them and just look at who they are in the world, I look at Francis in the world and I go, that's a really dynamic, interesting empowered, engaged human being. Like, wow, that's great, right? And also, you know, one that struggles with being 15. So yes, there you go.
Yes. I have yet to meet a 15-year-old who does not struggle with being
15. Yeah, exactly. So. In 2017. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you talk about, you know, the sense of social justice. You talk about, you know, being very, very outgoing and depression and anxiety. Do you think any of these things are connected to his gender or his transition in gender?
Yeah, I have thought that. I have thought, you know, when Francis was little, we thought we were raising this radical feminist, right? This amazingly outspoken little person who was really standing up for people's rights all the time, and mostly right around gender and or sexual orientation. So, you know, Francis would be the 7-year-old in the playground. If someone used the word gay or fag, or Francis would be the one saying, "You can't say that. That's really disrespectful," and blah blah blah. And so, as Francis got a little bit older, maybe, you know, into being 9 and 10, you know, we really started to see, you know, that was difficult, that was causing problems. But Francis was never a follower, like was never a kid who would just go along with what they were supposed to do because everybody said. If Francis thought it wasn't right, Francis just wouldn't do it. And so I think in many ways, I don't know that Francis would say this, but I think that he was really internalizing his own, you know, that was what was going on internally, was this sort of struggle with what's right and what's wrong and who do you be and how do you be who you are. And so I think it manifested in, you know, in coming out. But at that time, I think that's what it was. I think it was really those gender struggles for sure.
Was there a clear sense of Francis coming out?
Not in that, there was not a sort of a definitive, let's sit down and have this conversation, I have to tell you something, no. There was, I would say, in about grade 7, there was, there were some clear statements that Francis was making. I remember my niece got married when Francis was 10, and I wanted Francis to wear a dress. And I can't believe I'm saying that, I'm embarrassed that I'm saying that. And I said, you know, it doesn't have to be a frilly dress, you know, just please. And I remember Francis really pushing back and really not wanting to. And I, you know, and Francis's dad was going, "You can wear whatever you want," which wasn't helpful to me. and I couldn't figure out why it mattered. And then I realized it mattered because, you know, my 78-year-old mother might hate it, or my fairly conservative sister might hate it, or, you know, and so I was worried about them. And so that was really the first time I started thinking, oh, this is just a girl that doesn't like to wear dresses. But it was more than that. Like they were really upset about it, and really. And so after that, sort of then as into grade 7 and 8, there was more of that. There were more challenges around, and not so much that Francis would get upset about it, but that would just make clear statements about, "I'm not doing that. I'm not wearing that. You know, we're in class and we're doing it. We have to separate between the boys and the girls. Why do we have to do that?" You know, those kinds of things. So it was a slow transition. And then when they went into high school that summer was when they actually said, "I'm going into high school. My name is now Francis, and I want you to call me Francis. And my pronoun is they." At that time, it was they. Mm-hmm. So.
And how was that for you?
Well, I want to say, oh, it was fine. If I'm really honest, it was harder than I thought it should have been or would have been. Because I think as soon as that happens, you know, it changes your whole idea of not just your own child, but of your relationship to all of the people in your life. Like all of a sudden you're like, oh, how do I treat people according to their gender? What do I do? What does that mean? There's definitely issues around the language. The pronouns are difficult for people. Francis's dad is a grammar Nazi, and so really had a hard time with it. Like really said, "I can't use an incorrect pronoun. I can't." And it went on for a few months. I think we thought, to be completely honest, it was just a little phase, and Francis was trying something out, and let's see how it goes. You know, we thought the same thing when Francis said they wanted to be a vegetarian when they were 8, and we were like, "Yeah, that's going to last 3 weeks." Francis is now 15 and is still a vegetarian, so there's no phase going on there. But initially it didn't feel like it was hard because it was just like, sure, I can, you know, they, sure. But it was when, you know, the sort of next layers of that come in where you start talking about, do you want to wear a binder? Do you want, you know, when those things, and I don't think I reacted to those things as well as I would have liked because I was really worried about changing your body and, you know, and Francis doesn't do a lot of that stuff, but has certainly asked about it and is curious about it. And so it's harder of how to deal with other people around it than it is dealing with, because when you the discomfort, like I always sort of put it down to, it's really hard to change the way you talk, to change your language, but imagine how hard it must be to be in a body that doesn't feel right. Like, how, I'm sorry, you know, a pronoun is a stupid little word, you know, like it's not a stupid word to a trans person, but it's an important word, but it's not that hard for me to change a word. It's way harder to live in the world in that level of discomfort in your own body. You know, I can't imagine, right? Yeah. So
that's a really nice way of framing it, because I know many people over that transition process, and you know, I mess up their name,
I mess up their
pronoun, I think, oh my God, this is so hard. why are you doing this to me? Right? And how challenging it is. And I think you really highlight that, you know, the discomfort that I feel as a cisgendered male, having to change some language is very, very different.
Yeah, I think it's harder to, we had a conversation here one night with a relative. And an older relative, and he was going on and on about the imbalance of expecting him to change language and to change the language that he's known his whole life. And this is a man in his 60s, and how he was having a really hard time doing that for Francis because he didn't think it was right that he should be so discomforted. And I wanted to rip his face off. Well, not
Thank
really.
You for your but,
I mean, I love him. He's a family member. Yeah. But I just thought, oh, so you're comparing your discomfort with Francis's discomfort? I'm sorry. This is not a contest here. And if it is, you know, Francis has a lot more to figure out than you do just because you have to change language. I'm sorry. That's not acceptable. So anyway, so it's those kinds of things.
Often when we talk about trans people, or when trans people are talked about in the media, there's a narrative of oppression and violence against, and these are very, very real realities. And I worry that we frame trans people as, you know, under this rubric of a problem or difficulty or struggle or obstacle. You know, as you're talking with Francis, you're smiling far more than anything else. And so what are some of the learnings, the celebrations, the joys around being in relationship with Francis as a trans person?
Well, I mean, if I can just share, when I was pregnant with Francis, I was older, and I knew I was only going to have one child. And at the time, I desperately wanted a girl. And I really wanted to have a little girl. And I didn't really tell anybody that too much, because I didn't want to, if it was a boy, I thought, bad energy, right? I didn't want to do that. But Francis was born, and we were told, it's a girl. And I was so happy. And would I have been any less happy if it had been a boy? I don't know. Right. And then when Francis was transitioning and we were going through, you know, some fairly intense conversations, and I was grieving the loss of that little girl, I asked myself this question all the time. What did it mean when I said I wanted a girl? What was I saying? What was I really thinking? And I remember in a conversation with Francis when we were talking about they wanted to stop their period because they were getting a lot of anxiety around getting a period, and it made me really uncomfortable. And I was trying to figure out, we were having this very intense conversation and I was getting really upset. And I said to Francis, at that time, Francis was identifying as gender fluid, which I was easier to accept, to be honest. And I was saying, if you're gender fluid, then why are you denying the female side of yourself? It's equally of value, blah, 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 blah. You know, Francis explained, because in the world I am met as a female and I don't like that and it makes me uncomfortable. And then I said, but I don't like that you're denying the female side of yourself, because it feels like there's a distance between us then, because I as female feel then distant from you. And then we got to this conversation about my wanting a girl and what did that mean. And I said, I guess what it means is that because I was only going to have one child, I wanted to be as connected to you as I could possibly be. And I thought that if we shared a gender, that would mean I would understand things about you that your dad wouldn't and blah, blah, blah. And then Francis just looked me right in the face and said, well, there is that divide between us because I'm gender fluid and you're cis. So basically they were just looking at me going, get over yourself. And it was like, yeah, okay, fair enough. Deal with the distance, right? It was sort of like, deal with it. When I think about that story, I love it, because it was just sort of like, yeah, like, stop making it about you, please. And I thought, yeah, like, exactly. It isn't about me. It's about you. And so that to me was a great learning experience. And Francis does that to us all the time, like all the time. Annoyingly so. But, you know, I mean, there are other, you know, there are. Yeah, I guess that's all I'll say about that.
Along with the celebrations and the joys, when we were talking about doing this interview, you said that, you know, a lot of your own fears and insecurities and discomforts that don't belong to Francis became really apparent to you. Can you share any of those with us?
Well, I think I've always thought of myself as really progressive. When Francis was a baby, because I had done a lot of work in the gay community and seen levels of homophobia that were just, you know, around AIDS and when people were dying and being treated just horribly. And so I always felt that if I ever had a child, I wanted to make sure that there was normalcy in the world for whoever that child was. And so this is going to sound ridiculous, but I would read stories at bed. You know, I love reading stories. I love reading to kids. And it was something we did all the time. I would read every night. And whenever we were reading the story, even when Francis was like 2 and 3 years old, if we were reading the fairy tale and it said, for example, and the princess will grow up to marry the prince, I would always add in, or the princess, because I wanted there to be this, that it was totally normal and fine. And so I thought I was really prepared to have a gay child. That wouldn't have been any problem at all, you know? So when Francis talked about being gender fluid initially, you know, I was upset with myself for having such a hard time with it. Because I thought, if, you know, I've always thought of myself as being so open and so, why is this hard? Why is this harder than it should be? And I think it's because I live in this world and I am of a certain age. Mm-hmm. And in my life as a child, that was, I never would have ever imagined that I could have been anything other than female. Mm-hmm. Like, it never would have occurred to me. And I was aware that I was carrying some of that from my own parents, you know, who at one time when I was a teenager said, if any of my kids were gay, I would put them in a mental hospital. And I was horrified. But, you know, my own parents came to terms with that themselves over time. So it was that sort of feeling of discomfort. And I wanted Francis to figure it out for me. Like, I was realizing that I wanted Francis to make it better for me so that I didn't feel bad that I felt bad, if that makes sense. And Francis couldn't do that, nor is it Francis' responsibility to do that. And so I think that's when I say I see some of those fears in me. It's not fear of trans people, but it's fear of, part of it's fear for my own child and their safety. You know, every time Francis goes into a men's bathroom in a public place, I'm like holding my breath a little bit going, it's okay. Like, it's fine, right? Like, it's fine. They're fine. Mm-hmm. And I see men coming out of the bathroom sort of rolling their eyes and I'm going, it's fine. It's all fine. You know, so that, you know, that's just a natural parental mm-hmm. fear for your child's mm-hmm. safety. Right. Mm-hmm. But so it's kind of connected to all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I just answered mm-hmm. your question, but
I think you did answer my question. There's lots of discussion, particularly in the States right now, somewhat in Canada, although certainly less so, but there's been a lot of discussion around, you know, access to washrooms and bathrooms and that sort of stuff. And, you know, as you were talking around your own anxieties or fears or concerns, what's the link to the fears in the larger culture around people going into washrooms not assigned at birth, and I ask that not to say, you know, that prejudice, you know, to justify or rationalize prejudice. I say that for service providers and for parents listening to connect to understand the relationship between being a parent is being a parent, is loving your child is loving your child.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's about ultimately, you know, that you want your child to be able to live in the world the way that they, with all the same rights as everyone else and privileges and opportunities. And, you know, and I mean, Francis, you know, lives in a very privileged place in Toronto, you know, with fairly progressive parents, if I can say that, you know, nice middle class parents and goes to a really good school and has a great circle of friends and, you know, has a level of privilege that I know not lots, many, many kids in Francis' situation don't have. And so, but at the same time, you know, I see in people's eyes their judgment of my child just because they're not what that particular person might think they should or should not be. And so, you know, it's that judgment that you want your child to live freely in the world. And if your child wants to pee in the men's bathroom, again, get over yourself. Like, what's the big deal? The safety, I guess, comes from, you know, feeling that there are extreme people who extremely dislike trans people, I remember one day about a year ago, we were sitting eating dinner and the radio was on and something was on, and Francis looked up at us and said, you know, I just figured out that there are people in the world who think that I should be dead. And I remember, and we sort of went, you know, as a parent you want to go no but we, you know, had to say, you're right, you're absolutely right, that's true. I've never felt that in my life. Yeah. I've never felt like somebody wanted me to be dead, you know, or wished I would just go away. Maybe some people, but or shut up. It's more likely.
After they got to know you, at least.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so that's the fear. The fear is, you know what? That's real. Yeah. That's a real fear. And I have been with my child in a mall and seen a double take. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Who is that? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm, mm-hmm. I don't think that's, that's awful. Really.
Yeah. You talk about having a certain amount of privilege and supports for Francis and for you based upon where you live and your economic situation, et cetera. Have you had many interactions with social services when it comes to Francis and gender?
Not specifically. And that's mainly been Francis's choice. There have been several times when we've said, oh, there's this great, you know, Francis loves the arts. Oh, there's this great arts group for trans kids. You should go to that. Or, you know, oh, look, this youth services has blah, blah, blah. And Francis said very clearly, I don't want to be defined only as being a trans person. I don't. And Francis will speak very honestly and openly if asked, but doesn't want to sort of put themselves out there and connect only through their trans identity. And so, in terms of social services, they haven't really wanted to connect. I mean, certainly they have a counselor and they have, but it's not, you know, through a specific program for trans kids. It's just a general therapist, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
You've talked about the school that he goes to, the high school that he goes to, being really supportive. What what is it about the school that makes it supportive? And what I'm asking, and the question behind the question is really, how do we as service providers, we being, you know, me and the people who are listening, how do we as service providers be that exemplar of a really great school or social service agency working with someone like Frances?
Well, I think, you know, the school that Frances goes to has a history of working with kids who may fall outside of the sort of mainstream education system, whatever that means. You know, kids who, you know, years and years ago when the Triangle program through the TDSB was running, you know, and those kids were getting integrated back into schools, they would go to this school, and that school was very supportive of those kids. So kids naturally gravitated, any kid that was sort of feeling that they were outside of the norm would gravitate towards that school. It's also an arts school, so, you know, even though it's not a specifically audition school, so it's not about kids finding careers in the arts, it's about kids who like working in that sort of creative environment. And so I would say, in answer to your question, that I think first and foremost, a school has to be respectful of the experience of its students, and to say if there's one kid in a school that's identifying as being trans, then that shifts the school because it has to. In the same way, if one child is in a wheelchair, the school's gotta make some. That's the public education system must do that. And so, you know, when schools debate about gender neutral bathrooms, I sort of go, oh come on, like, you know, it's not a difficult thing, and it's. And I think in this particular school, and even this school has its own, you know, we still get notes from the school about some event that's happening, and it will say, have your son or daughter, or no, it will say, have your, or boys and girls. It will refer to boys and girls, and I kind of go, oh, this is a really open school and has lots of trans kids, and yet you're still using that kind of language. So, you know, I think everybody's got a lot to learn, but it's the willingness to be open and to say, what does, you know, ask that child what they need, you know, ask them what they need. Yeah. They might go, I would never in a million years want you to just make a gender neutral bathroom just for me. That would be really embarrassing, and you'd be outing me or whatever, you know, whatever. So I think it's just being aware and being accepting and not saying, oh, that kid is outside of this circle of kids. They're not. They're just another kid with other different needs. That's all, right? Yeah. I think.
Just as we move to wrap up, I know a lot of young trans folks have had real struggles with their primary care providers, you know, physicians, the medical establishment.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whether it be about going on hormone blockers or going on testosterone or, you know, HST or HRT or replacement therapy, you know, whatever it might be. What do you think, you know, medical care providers can do to support young trans, particularly children, adolescents?
I mean, it's really interesting. Frances has a really good relationship with our family doctor, who's amazing. And amazing because she listens to Frances, doesn't listen to me necessarily, listens to Frances first, and has had lots of private conversations with Frances that she's said, I'm not sharing with you. And to me, that's amazing that Frances has that person in the medical profession and understands that there are those people. We have not really been down the road of, you know, we haven't done hormone replacement and we haven't got there yet. And if I can be totally honest, I'm not sure whether Frances is protecting us by not doing that quite yet, or whether, you know, they're worried about that, about raising that, and that becomes difficult. But again, you know, it's about listening to what young people tell us and being open to learning from them, because Frances has taught us tons of stuff around gender and all kinds of things. I didn't know there was such a thing as pansexual and, you know, like all of these kinds of terms and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. Because they're on the internet all the time. and it's all right there. But so, you know, I don't know that I have a lot of knowledge or a lot to say to the medical profession other than, you know, generally speaking, in terms of all of this, parents, schools, friends, family, medical profession, you know, all of us, it's really just about listening to those kids. What do they need? Let them tell you what they need. And then it's your job to provide it because you're the adult and therefore it's your job. Yeah. You know, I mean, I read a whole bunch of books when Frances came out and raising a trans child. Mm-hmm. And I got a whole bunch of books. I only read about two of them because I got to the end of this second book and all it said, and I thought, all it's really saying is see who your child is, respect them and love them. How hard can that be, you know, unless you have a horrible child? No, I'm just kidding. You know, I mean, how hard is that really? It's not as complicated. We make it so complicated.
Yeah.
And I know for parents who are struggling and, you know, parents who, you know, there are lots, you know, Frances has friends and they're, I just want to go and slap their parents and go, are you kidding me? Like, really? Mm-hmm. This is your child. You know, your child can't be out in the family because... Frances is a friend who can't be out at home because they have a younger brother and they don't want the younger brother to know. And it's like, so this poor child is one person at home and one person at school. And, you know, that's not good for anybody. No. And so you wonder about who are you really protecting there.
Thank you, Patty.
You're welcome.
You've done a lovely, lovely job of introducing Frances to me, to the listeners, and I really appreciate you sharing the wisdom of your journey thus far, and I think there'll be many, many, many more, you know, celebrations in this journey, and no doubt challenges as well. But it sounds to me like your heart is open and willing to be transformed, and it's, you know, that we all have parents who can own their mistakes like you and can say, this is what I did wrong, and just stay in it and keep learning and loving.
Well, I was just talking to Frances about this the other day. I'd just love to end with this because I know, you know, sometimes you're talking to people and they're asking, oh, how's Frances? And I'll be talking about Frances and their friends or somebody that knows us or whatever. And I get this kind of like congratulations, like, oh, you're so great. You're doing so great. And it's one of those things where it feels so wrong because you're congratulating me for being the parent of this child. Well, guess what? You know, I didn't. And I wonder, and even though, you know, these are friends of mine whom I love and care about and know us and love us. And, you know, I think to myself, you're just a product of this environment, of this society where what you're really saying is underneath what you're saying is because what you're dealing with isn't normal or isn't really okay, but you're doing a great job of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. And so it's this very weird compliment that makes me really uncomfortable because until we stop needing to congratulate parents like me for just being parents, you know, it needs to be to get to that point. Anyway.
Yeah. Respect, listen, love your child.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Patty, thank you very, very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.